Well, I'd like to first thank the organizers for inviting me to speak here. And thank you to all of you for attending this talk. So it seems that half of the people are away, but I'll start anyway. So yeah, I'll tell you today about coarse graining of a particular set of spinnet models. They are based on the quantum group SU2Cube. And what we heard a little bit yesterday in Bianca's talk, today I will give you more details. So let's start by a brief introduction. As we all know, spin-phone models tend to provide a non-perturbative quantization for gravity. And so they provide a regularized path integral for gravity, and the regularization is attained by discretizing spacetime. In particular, spin phones are defined on two complexes, namely on two skeletons defined by faces, edges, and vertices. And they can be seen as generalizations of lattice gauge theories, generalizations in the sense that they are background independent, and therefore, for these models, there is no such a thing like a lattice scale. Because of the discretization introduced by the lattice, in general, the symmetry of general relativity, diffeomorphism symmetry, is broken. So the main open question for spin phones is what is their physics in large scales? I mean here the limit where we consider many building blocks and small discretization scales. In other words, we wonder whether they flow under renormalization to a continuum phase, and whether, if such phase exists, whether it is compatible with general relativity. Okay, so since that question is very difficult to face for actual spin phones for gravity, we started looking at it in analog models that are simpler, so-called spin net models. These are models defined on one complexes, namely on 1D skeletons formed by edges and vertices. And unlike the spin phones, they are non-trivial in 2D. They are interesting models, not only because of their simplicity, but also because, well, as Bianca also mentioned yesterday, it turns out to be a similarity between 4D lattice gauge theories and 2D spin systems. And we hope that this similarity remains for spin phones. Okay, so as I say, they are non-trivial in 2D, and in particular, these spin-net models retain essential features of spin phones, in particular, the simplicity constraints that define the dynamics of the models. So today, I will tell you about spin-net models based on quantum deformation of the group SU2. And we will see how to coarse-grain these models by using tensor network renormalization group approaches. Okay, so let's start first with a very basic introduction in spin phones. Most of you are already experts in this topic, but let me just review a few things. So the starting point for spin phones is gravity formulated in a first order formulation. And we all know that in 3D, then in this formulation, gravity becomes VF theory, which is topological, as like the equations of motions are really simple. This is a theory of flat connections, and with then no propagating degrees of freedom, only topological ones. But then if we move to 4D, BF can be written as, gravity in 4D can be written as BF plus an extra term that encodes what we call simplicity constraints. These constraints ensure that this B field has a geometrical origin. Okay. For people more familiar with Jahn-Mills theory, I would like to comment that also we can write Jahn-Mills as BF plus an extra term that contains here the coupling constant. So later when I will talk about the phase diagram and phases, so we will comment that for Jahn-Mills, we have two phases, one for the weak coupling limit and another for the strong coupling limit. And we can attempt to do a similar phase diagram for this kind of theories. Now, so now the parameters that we will look at are somehow related with this parameter phi here. Well, there are several. So in other words, when we look at phase diagrams, we look at different ways how to impose the simplicity constraints. Okay. So as I say, the spin forms are defined on two complexes. So given a group G, we attach a Hilbert space in its phase, this Hilbert space. Here by V rho, I mean the representation space of the irreducible representation rho of the group G. So we have an irreducible representation attached to every phase of the two complex, and also a weight associated to every phase. And then we also have intertwiners on the vertices of the two complex. By intertwiners, I mean tensors living on the tensor product of the Hilbert spaces meeting, of all the phases meeting on every edge. And then, so the partition function of the model is just a contraction following the connectivity of the two complex of the weights associated to the phases and of the intertwiners associated to the vertices. Okay. When we do a standard lattice gauge theory, the intertwiner that we associate to every edge is simply the so-called hard intertwiner, namely the projector that projects onto the space of tensors that are invariant under the action of the group. For spin forms, the intertwiner is no longer the hard projector, but in general some other projector which projects onto a smaller space. And since we are attempting to quantize gravity, we want these theories to be background independent, and that in particular implies that there is no lattice scale, and to avoid the lattice scale in our theory, we fix these phase weights to be trivial. Okay, so all the dynamics of the model is encoded in these intertwiners associated to the vertices, to the edges of the two complex. Okay. Sorry?
Is the sum convergent? The sum of all our representations, is it convergent?
Okay, in general, no. If you take a Lie group,
yeah,
that's an issue. Here, I'm going to work with a finite group because I don't know how to deal with a Lie group. Okay? That's why, so we started analyzing these models for abelian groups, then we moved to this simplest non-abelian group, S3, and now we are dealing with quantum groups for Q root of unity. Okay. And the goal would be to get
but this means that your regularization is the order of the group in a way.
Yeah. Okay. So the question then is whether we find more phases or fixed points apart from those of a standard lattice gauge theory. So as I said before, for a standard lattice gauge theory, if we somehow look at the coupling, we find two different phases, a deconfining phase for weak coupling limit and a confining phase for the strong coupling limit. So in a spin force, the analog of the confining phase would be a degenerate phase with no space whatsoever. And the analog to the deconfining phase would be the topological BF phase. So the question is whether there are more phases or more fixed points, and also what happens on the phase transitions between those phases. Okay. So I'm going to analyze those questions for these simpler models that are spin nets. They are obtained from spin forms simply by a dimensional reduction. So I go from two complexes to one complex. So now I have this Hilbert space attached to every edge. So I have irreducible representations of the group on the edges, and the intertwiners live on the vertices. So naturally, spinners are tensor network models with tensors attached to that vertices, and the partition function is just the tensor trace of that tensor network, namely the contraction of the tensors following the connectivity of the lattice. Okay. So as I say, I am going to focus on spin nets defined on the quantum deformation of the SG2 algebra with Q root of unity. I will characterize the group with the so-called level which is related with Q just by this simple expression. So as for SU2, the irreducible representations of this group are labeled by half integers, and those that are smaller than half the level are called admissible, and the rest are called zero trace and can be moved out. So I only need to take care of these representations. So this is, so I'm dealing here with a finite number of representations. So I didn't say yet, but I'm going to deal with the models defined on the square lattice. So I have this kind of tensors with four legs. And then using diagrammatic calculus, we are able to construct the hard projector, which is this P. And then we consider tensors that have this property, namely they have quantum group symmetries. They are invariant under the left action and the right action of the hard projector. But let me emphasize that these tensors are different than the hard projector. So these tensors somehow encode analog to simplicity constraints. Okay, so I'm going to tell you later how to constrain these tensors applying the tensor network renormalization group approaches. For that, it is convenient to do a change of basis from the usual basis with magnetic indices to the recoupling basis. And we chose two different recoupling schemes, one where representation one and two couple to the same representations than three and four, and I will label those by J5 and J5 prime, and the other recoupling scheme where I couple two with three and one with four to other pair of representations six and six primes. So in this basis, the tensor is diagonal per blocks. It doesn't depend anymore on the magnetic indices. It only depends in the four original representations and in these indices here that somehow give me the intertwiner channels, right? So I will call always 5 and 5 prime and T1 to the blocks in the in this recoupling scheme, and T2 the tensor in the other recoupling scheme. Okay, so now I have my tensor diagonalized per blocks, and I will, when I coarse grain, I will look at those blocks independently. Okay. So now I'm going to define the actual models that we have coarse grain. So we choose our tensors of this form. They are a linear combination of certain tensors that are based on intertwiners that are triangulation invariant. These guys were constructed by Bianca and Wojtek Kaminski in a previous paper. So they've verified some properties such that they give a triangulation invariant intertwiner model. So they live in the tensor product of four representation spaces, and then taking them, we construct the dual, this ket, and with the bracket, we construct the whole tensor, all right? These intertwiners that we choose are such that only representations till a certain maximal representation capital J are excited. So in this context, we can interpret simplicity constraints as forbidding representations that are bigger than this capital J. Okay, so choosing these guys, I construct my tensor, and then under coarse graining in general, this tensor is going to run till we hit a fixed point. Okay, and then by varying these parameters alpha that parameterize my tensor, we are able to construct phase diagrams. Okay, let me give some remarks about the parametrization. Okay, so since these intertwiners implement somehow simplicity constraints, these parameters alpha are going to parameterize that imposition of the simplicity constraints. And so these intertwiners, or well, these objects are constructed taking seriously that the intertwiner channels as the relevant degrees of freedom. So this parametrization is close to what would do for spin phones, in the sense that they are already taking into account a weak notion of triangulation invariance. in the spirit of the KKL model, in the sense that we demand somehow invariance under subdivisions and so on. In previous works, we actually were not using this parametrization. We were using a very different one that, roughly speaking, was constructed the tensor as hard projector, and some weights associated to the edges, so-called E functions. So this is a bit similar to what people would do in a standard lattice gauge theory, simply a deformation of the hard projector. So this is still very close to lattice gauge theory. And actually, we were using this parametrization, we were not able to see any phase different than the standard ones. So I have here an example. These are some parameters that we used in this case. You don't need to know the meaning right now. Just to tell you that what we were observing for this parametrization is that our models were flowing either to the degenerate phase or to the analog to the BF phase. And we saw a non-trivial fixed point, non-standard fixed point, only in this phase transition. But we didn't see any phase associated to this non-standard fixed point. Now, with this other parametrization that is adapted to this notion of triangulation invariance, we actually see extended phases for non-standard fixed points, as we will see later. Non-trivial, non-standard, in the sense that it's neither BF nor the degenerate phase. Later I will detail how these fixed points are. Okay. So now let me give a few hints about how this tensor network renormalization group approach works. This was developed for condensed matter systems. So what we do is a singular value decomposition of our tensor. But as I say, I have the tensor diagonalized per blocks, so I do a singular value decomposition in every block. And I adapt this singular value decomposition to the recoupling schemes that I told you about. So that doing that, we get an algorithm that explicitly preserves the quantum group symmetries of the tensor. So diagrammatically, I can explain that in this way. So what we do with these T1 blocks is doing this splitting in three valent tensors, coupling one with two and three with four. And for the blocks T2, we couple two with three and four with one. And then I have here, so the singular value decomposition orders the degrees of freedom from biggest, from the most relevant ones to the less relevant ones. And to make the coarse-graining algorithm a feasible task for the computer, we have to put a truncation in this singular value decomposition. So I introduce here a cutoff, chi, that is going to give me then the bond dimension of this new edge in blue, or this other chi G6, G6 prime for the other kind of blocks. So here I introduce my truncation, but you see we have a control on the truncation. The biggest this cutoff, the better the approximation that we are doing in this singular value decomposition. So let me emphasize that here, for us, the relevant degrees of freedom are intertwiner degrees of freedom. Okay, so alternating these two splittings in my original lattice, we can rewrite the lattice in this three valent tensor network, and now we can contract these squares and get a new effective lattice with new effective edges in blue and green, and new effective tensors on the new vertices. And you see that this lattice is coarser than the previous one. So we iterate that, and well, so by performing this contraction, we get new tensors in the vertices, and we can extract the new effective blocks, T1 and T2. So, and we iterate that till we get a fixed point. Let me do some remarks here. So as I said, I truncate the singular value decomposition to a certain cutoff, and this cutoff is giving me the multiplicity of the intertwiner channel JJ prime. So this appears with certain multiplicity, and also remember I started with this Hilbert space in every edge with VJ here and the dual there, but since I am doing this splitting, now this structure gets more general, so now we get this kind of Hilbert space with here V on the right doesn't need to be the dual anymore. It's just associated to another representation G prime. And as I say, this appears with certain multiplicity. So if in the fixed point we find that after all, this J prime is equal to dual, to the dual J, to dual to this one, then we are back in a standard lattice gauge theory. But in general, for analog models of spin forms, we will see that in the fixed point, these J primes do not need to be the same as the J dual. And the action of simplicity constraints is just that some representations will be forbidden. Okay, so now I'm going to present results for a particular example that is for level equal to 10. So we have a maximal spin equal to 5. So I can have up to 6 terms in this linear combination. But before considering linear combinations, let me just consider one single term, a certain alpha j here contributing. So I'm going to characterize the fixed points by the matrix of singular values in every block. So we see that for all the fixed points that we find, only one singular value contributes. So here I'm going to construct a matrix of singular values for the different intertwiners channels JJ prime. All right. So for this first case, where I consider only alpha zero contributing and the rest are zeros, so here I consider only the term alpha zero, we get a fixed point that corresponds to the degenerate one in the sense that only the trivial representation is allowed. All right. Then now, if I consider alpha one here, we find a fixed point where representations zero and one are allowed, and the rest are not excited. This fixed point is factorizing in the following sense. So we started with certain tensor with intertwiner ij and the dual here. And then under the renormalization flow, this flows to a certain tensor where these two intertwiners are decoupled. So this one goes with representations j, and this one goes with representations j prime. So it totally factorizes. That's why we call it factorizing. For alpha 2 and alpha 3, I find similar factorizing fixed points, just that more representations are excited. For factorizing J2, I have representations 0, 1, and 2. And for factorizing J3, I have representations 0, 1, 2, 3. OK, but then if we move to alpha 4, we don't find the factorizing, let's say, J4. What we find is the analog of the BF fixed point, for which only intertwiner channels with J prime equal to J are excited. So you see, this is a standard case where J prime is J dual. And finally, for alpha 5 here, we find what we call a mixed fixed point. And this is the most interesting one because it's neither a standard nor factorizing. So it has the matrix of singular values for this guy has this structure. So we see that only intertwiner channels for which J plus J prime is even contribute are excited. All right. So now I am showing you this for this example, but we actually found this pattern for every K. So this is kind of general. As remarks or important messages to take home. So we found non-standard fixed points beyond the analog BF and the degenerate one, that are the standard ones. We don't need to fine tune to flow to these non-standard fixed points, thanks to the clever parametrization that we are employing. And these non-standard factorizing fixed points, they describe triangulation invariant models, namely topological field theories, as Bianca explained. Okay, so now I can consider linear combinations of several terms. I'm going to consider 4 terms in the linear combination, but one of them is fixed by these conditions. So I'm going to have diagrams depending on 3 parameters. For example, for this case, I fix alpha 0 and 1 equal to 0. So we have contributing 2, 3, and 4. And I can consider also this case as another example where the parameters that I am varying are alpha 1, alpha 3, and alpha 4. In both cases, we find 4 extended phases. So here we have in blue the phase where, okay, let me say that. So here I pick up a model with initial parameters, I don't know, in this graph, and we cross-grain that model. And in the different colors, you can see the fixed point where that model flows to. Okay, so these models in blue, they flow to the fixed point, which is analog to BF. In green, we have fixed point models that flow to factorizing fixed points. This in dark green, we see the factorizing J equal to 3. Or for this case, we find factorizing J equal to 2. Or for this case, where alpha 2 is 0 and alpha 1 is different from 0, we find the factorizing J equal to 1. And finally, in orange, we find this more interesting mixed fixed point. So you see, we find extended phases for all of them. Somehow, BF is always between them. We don't find phase transitions between the non-standard fixed points. Always, BF always gets in between. But actually, we would need to analyze with more detail the phase transitions. This is just a kind of a rough analysis of the phase diagram. Okay, now let me tell you about the relation between a closer relation of spinnets with spinphons, because actually we can understand this spinnets as spinphons in a very particular discretization. So consider the spinphon in the cubic lattice, actually just one slide. And now if we identify all the horizontal edges such that this spinphon collapses to this melonic spinphon, we see it's very easy to prove that the partition function for this guy is the partition function of the spinnet model I was telling you about. So we can see spinnets as melonic spinphons. So in with this interpretation, we can understand a bit better what these fixed points are. So what I call the factorizing fixed points, those are fixed points for which the two vertices in this melon completely decouple. The analog BF fixed points would be the fixed point for which the gluing between these two vertices is maximal. And then we expect that imposing simplicity constraints weakens that gluing. And that's what happens for the mixed fixed point. It couples the two vertices, but in a weaker way than the BF analog fixed point. So there are two contrasting effects here, gluing versus decoupling. And the simplicity constraints provoke this gluing to become more decoupling. Okay, so I'm going to conclude already. So we have been able to define spinnet models based on a quantum group, which is not really trivial because there are many subtleties associated with the group representation theory of the quantum group. And then, so we have developed a cross-graining algorithm that explicitly preserves the group symmetries of the tensors, and it tracks intertwiner degrees of freedom. And using that algorithm, we have found a rich structure of fixed point and extended phases and phase transitions. And we don't need to fine-tune in order to flow to those interesting phases. As I said, the fixed points that we found describe triangulation invariant models. Well, Bianca commented more yesterday that in order to find fixed points with propagating degrees of freedom, we would need to go to a more non-local algorithm. So here, this is completely based on local embedding maps, and the fixed points that we find are topological. We saw how to interpret spinnets as melonic spinphons, and so we saw that there is a contrasting effect of gluing versus decoupling, and in particular, we found a very interesting fixed point, which is something in between maximal gluing and maximal decoupling. And we believe that this fixed point or similar ones might be relevant for spinphon models. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Question? interesting to understand whether you can somehow discover the same universality class in other models. So can you say anything about the critical exponents from this
point? I don't have much to say there.
It will be from the phase transitions.
Yeah. So actually, I didn't give all the details about the algorithm, but I told you that we are using a cutoff in the singular value decomposition. Actually, to get those phase diagrams, we are doing a very rough cutoff in the sense that we are actually picking up a singular value decomposition, only a single one. So we only have a rough skin of the phase diagram. To know what happens really in the phase transitions, we would need to do, a systematic study of increasing this cutoff, and this requires high computational power, so, and there are lots of time. So we still need to understand better what is going on in the phase transitions. But surprisingly, this truncation already picks up the relevant physics, let's say, in the sense of, at least for the phase diagram.
Yeah, so I think what Astrid was asking was because you called these fixed points, and I think the translation would be that those are the effective actions at low k. So they would actually be the path integral. They would actually be the solution to the path integral for some very coarse-grained observable, right?
Yeah.
That's the understanding.
Yeah.
Okay. So then there are no critical exponents. They're really just the physical passing difference.
Okay. Yeah.
What about the
other
phase transitions? Yes, there are phase transitions, but you don't see it in one. You see it when you compare.
So there are methods, but we haven't tried it yet. What do you do first? Because you could go to other more complicated models, which
very naive question, but the regularity of the lattice seems to play a role in setting up the algorithm. So I was wondering if your philosophy is that when you try to apply these techniques to info models in four dimensions, are you thinking of restricting them also to some type of regular lattices or generalizing these techniques in such a way that you don't need to do that? What would be the...
Yeah, well, here, I do this for simplicity. I don't know how to do it in a more regular lattice, but I think the philosophy would be that if the fixed points are triangulation invariant, that somehow the lattice doesn't matter anymore. Or if we hope to recover, like in the discrete, we kind of think that diffeomorphism invariants translate into lattice invariants. So that's, I don't know if that's the hope. But here, I wouldn't know how to define this coarse graining algorithm in a random lattice, of course.
But as a comment, at least on the classical Reggie level, for this topological fixed point, we have shown the paper of Benjamin that the choice of lattice doesn't really matter. And the only important thing is to have a reasonable regular lattice defining. And so we would be happy if we can do the regular lattice.
Yeah.
And then you can do the irregular lattice.
Or already for spin phones in the regular lattice, this is difficult. So we are now thinking how to generalize this to spin phones in the cubic lattice.
So what would be the next step in trying to get to a spin phone, changing the gauge group or?
Yeah, now we would have tensors for the spin phones. We would have tensors on the faces and on the edges of the two complex. So, I don't have a picture here. So instead of having only tensors on the edges or on the vertices, we would have them on the faces. And it gets technically more complicated.
Is it a meaningful question to ask whether you starting from a situation where the simplicity constraint is not imposed, whether you flow towards a subset of actions which have it imposed, dynamically?
Okay, so by using this parametrization, so these intertwiners already impose somehow the simplicity constraints, because so the initial model, for instance, I don't know, iota, let's say, 1 only has representation 0 and 1 inside it. But then under Coase-Rainey, you get all the recoupling theory, and in principle, you go away from those simplicity constraints. Under Coase-Rainey, they are not preserved. But then we flow back to a fixed point that respects those simplicity constraints. But for these factorizing fixed points that I told you about. But for instance, for the mixed fixed point, our simplicity constraints are kind of non-trivial in the sense that here. So here it's not really that we forbid representations. What it is forbidden here is particular intertwiner channels, like pairs of representations. Yeah.
If you don't start with any simplicity constraint, you have the end that's topological. You won't flow.
If you start with something, you'll
maybe it would be interesting to start with something like BF plus instead of constraints and some potential to mimic what could happen also in high dimension.
That is our theory that it mimics something like that, but it's difficult to extract this potential.
It's difficult to
extract the potential.
So with our previous parametrization, we were somehow deforming BF,
yes.
But then we were flowing back either to BF or to the degenerate phase.
I have a naive question about the triangulation independence that you mentioned. Usually in order to define these intertwiners, you need to choose a cyclic ordering of the tensor products around one vertex. So these intertwiners are usually not invariant under rotating the lattice under 90 degrees.
Yeah.
So what happens at the fixed point? Are the models defined at the fixed point invariant under rotation under 90 degrees?
I don't think so. But are they?
They are
invariant
under
2.
Changing the virtual leads, right? Changing the recurrence.
That is 2-2. That is invariant under 2-2.
So they, if I use, if I define them in this way, I don't know, like I have a representation here, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they couple to, let's say, 5 for one magnetic in. Let's focus on just this space. So they verify this.
Okay, so this rotation invariance basically is the 2-2.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they also
modify.
Well,
rotating the square lattice by 90 degrees.
Okay.
All right, let's thank our speaker again.